Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on April 26th. It's Tuesday, April 26th, 2022. I had to look and remind myself of the date today. Hey, welcome to today's show with my good friends over at Urban Assembly. Dave Adams is back, the chief executive officer, and I hear he's got a big day today. After the show, he's going to go meet Mayor Adams. I don't know if he's going to meet him or see him again, but he's got a meeting with Mayor Adams, or at least going to hear him speak, whatever. We'll ask Dave about that today. So that's pretty cool. And he's brought with him Stephanie Fiorelli. Stephanie is the Director of Alumni Success over at Urban Assembly, and in case you don't know it, Urban Assembly is the nonprofit that supports 23 different schools within New York City public school system, kind of like Disney World in Florida. It's a kingdom within the state, okay? 23 schools in the New York City public school system, and shares its work nationally by partnering with districts across the nation to provide programming and social-emotional learning, which is key to what we do. Post-secondary readiness, we're going to talk a bit about post-secondary today, academics and alumni success, and that's what that's the part that Stephanie takes over. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, that's ace-ed.org. Go over there, our magazine, which has a big headline on the front cover, Equity and SEL. For this month, we'll put a new issue up there next week for the next month. Okay, but it's a terrific online journal. You just click through on the cover at ace-ed.org. All of our podcasts are over there. Our new website, okay, which is all about teacher retention, teacher recruitment, the educator shortage. It's listed under teacher retention. Please click through on that. And also on one of our favorites, which is a big part of what Urban Assembly does, which is seltoday.org. And everything's linked at ace-ed.org. Go over there, check it out. It's big stuff brewing in education. It's tough out there right now. There we go. We're all set. I'll start with my friend David. Good morning, David. It's Larry here.
Larry. So good to hear from you, man. How you doing?
I'm fine, my friend. Are you going to meet Eric Adams today, or have you met him before? What's going on?
Well, I know you had an opportunity to meet him before. I was on Eric Adams' transition committee, and so I've heard him speak while he was running for mayor. So today he is kind of celebrating his 100 days as mayor, and so there's going to be
an opportunity
to just get together and say hello, congratulations, and do that kind of stuff.
Well, have a martini and think of me. He's a good man. I think he's going to do pretty good in the job. I'll tell you the truth.
Well, I'll let him know.
Please do. Okay? He really is. He strikes me as a good guy, and I wish him the best of luck. And, you know, he's going through all this mess right now with the crime that's going on. Okay? And that's tough. Okay? And he's an ex-police officer, you know, and all that. I know that's his major concern. Let me just ask you before I get to Stephanie, what's his take on education? Okay? How's he work with you? That sort of stuff.
Well, you know, I think we're all working together to figure out the best way to educate the most students. So we're really interested in working with the administration and thinking through how to ensure schools are high quality, that all schools are rated for how well they teach students around growth, and then for ensuring that teachers have the tools that they need to differentiate different levels of instruction in the classroom, and then schools have the tools that they need to demonstrate how they're growing students across the spectrum of potential and performance. So we're looking forward to getting with the Adams administration, ensuring that that's what it looks like, because every kid in New York City deserves a high-quality education.
Right, and no relation. Are you guys related? You're both Adams. Oh, John Adams.
You know, if I had a nickel, you know, I would be doing well right now.
Right.
You have David Banks, who's the chancellor, and you have Eric Adams, who's the mayor. And so every other week or so, somebody amalgamates that and puts me into a news story that I didn't want to be in. So unfortunately, no, we're not related, but I like the work he's doing. I look forward to supporting his mayoral control.
Oh, that's cool. That's great, Dave. Thank you. Hello, Stephanie. How are you? I'm Larry. It's nice to see you. See you.
It's nice to meet you.
Thank you. And you have a great New York name, Fiorelli. Like Fiorelli. No, I'm kidding there. LaGuardia. Fiorello.
That's right. My Italian heritage. I'm a proud Midwesterner, though. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, but I love the connection that name gives me to New York.
Well, it's so rare I talk to somebody who has an airport named after them. So congratulations on that, Ms. Fiorelli. Okay? All right. And actually, Steph, I noticed here you got a 608, the area code. Are you in the Midwest now, or are you in New York now?
I'm in New York now, but I got my phone long time ago when my husband and I were living in Wisconsin, so I just never changed the number.
That's cool. Everybody does that. You can't tell where anybody's calling from these days or talking to, okay? It makes sense. And what is your background? You are the Director of Alumni Success over at Urban Assembly. Mm-hmm. You're working with a good team over there. I know so many of them. All right. And what's your background, if I may ask?
Yeah, sure. So I've been with
By the way,
UA
it's not a job interview.
Years.
Your job is secure. Your job is secure. I'm just curious what your background
Thank you. I
is.
Hope
yeah.
so.
You're welcome.
You know, because my boss is on the call. So
I know. He's a mean guy.
But, yeah, so yeah. I've been here for about 5 years, and I've been doing – I worked for a Democracy Prep Charter Network a few years prior to that, setting up their alumni programming. Yeah, and then – But like in my earlier life, I was a college writing instructor, and I also had a nonprofit that sort of supported emerging writers, and we produced a literary magazine every month. Yeah.
Well, that's very impressive. David is lucky. David and the team are lucky to have you. That's cool. So
I'm definitely lucky to be here.
Well, I think it's a mutual admiration society. All right. And, you know, I certainly know this. Let me just put it into perspective here. You know, using SEL and understanding the social emotional needs of kids. Okay. Urban Assembly works with it. You like the way you're like the Magic Kingdom, Dave, within the New York City schools, 23 schools.
We're not fighting with the mayor over nonsense in terms of our tax status and some of the ways that they're organizing their educational system. So.
Thank you. And if I may, the work you do is not Mickey Mouse. It's good stuff. It's great stuff.
Well, I mean, you can throw a little Mickey Mouse in there, a little love, a little happiness, a little magical thing in there can support imagination and moving the public education system forward.
Yeah, it's just amazing what's going on down in Florida. Okay, but Dave runs the really cool Magic Kingdom up at the Urban Assembly, the 23 schools that you partner with. In New York, and just tell everybody, you know, I want to say this because you do so much, but it's basically an SEL-based program that focuses on what those kids particularly need, okay, and then getting them ready for a really good career in life, wherever the world takes them. I just want to put that into a little more perspective, Dave, and then I'll swing over to Stephanie. We'll get them in school, through school, and now we'll get them out of school with Stephanie, but you go ahead.
Well, Larry, you said it really well. Here at the Urban Assembly, we produce innovation within public education. So we work with our 23 schools here to scale solutions across the country and across New York City. We do things in a couple of different ways. Larry, you talked about our SEL solutions, which are in 7 different states, scaled across 1,600 schools, 1.1 million kids here in New York City.
Wow.
We also support in things like academics, our algebra success program, focused on ensuring that students are passing algebra at high rates and using mathematical thinking. We talked a little bit while back with our colleagues from there talking about our algebra success in about 30 different schools outside of New York City. We got our leadership supports. We got our alumni success and post-secondary readiness. And all of this is making sure that our students have economic and social mobility. So very proud of the work that we're doing. If you have not in your audience looked up the Urban Assembly or you want to partner with the Urban Assembly, please shoot me an email, dadams@urbanassembly.org, or just look us up at urbanassembly.org. We'd be happy to help your school get to the next level.
Talk slower when you get to the mayor today, okay? It's dadams@urbanassembly.org. And go to urbanassembly.org, okay? And, Dave, I want to ask you, you know, it's called Urban Assembly, and you said you certainly work with the other states. Do you work only with urban schools? And that's a key question, okay? I want people to understand that.
It's a great question, too, and it's a question I get all the time. We work with all schools. We are from New York City. We're based in New York City, so our foundation, our identity is in urban school systems. But we look to understand generalizable problems. So we look to improve public education writ large. So any school district is available to support to be supported by the Urban Assembly, and we're happy to do so.
Yeah, and let me make the point, they know what they're doing. And in an age of social, emotional learning needs, there's probably nobody better to look at to help you run your school in this day and age. So there you go, urbanassembly.org, and that's Dave Adams. Stephanie, we get the kids through school. Stephanie comes. All of a sudden, as they graduate every June, Stephanie awakens from her slumber. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Our team wakes up then.
Yeah, June 1st, the Urban Assembly graduate team awakens every year. Okay, and so tell us what you do. Okay, Stephanie Fiorelli, tell us what you do.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, go ahead. Alumni success, which is key, I might add.
Right. So we essentially, our team builds the programming that supports alums when they leave high school. So we generally are trying to help alums learn how to, I would say, stay engaged with the networks that are most likely to enable their success. So we have three essential main programs that all kind of lean on that concept of authentic engagement. We have our Summer Bridge program, which has been around since 2008. We have a texting campaign that's been around since 2016, which is when I came to the UA. And then we also have a bridge extension program. So all three of them are trying to essentially help alumni transition into the careers that are most likely to lead to social and economic mobility. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I remember when I graduated high school and we had the graduation ceremony. And as we ran outside with our caps and gowns, we threw the caps in the air, and everybody was yelling, yay, this is over. I'll never talk to these people again as long as I live, okay? And I'm curious, okay, when the kids graduate from Urban Assembly programs, okay, do they just want to be – I hate to ask it this way, but I'll just ask. Are they just – like typical kids want to be rid of high school forever, and you have to fight to get them – to follow up, or have you prepared them that you're going to be following up with them and that this is ongoing? You get my point.
So I definitely do. And that was actually a bigger issue with when I worked for a charter school. I think a lot of the charter kids kind of wanted to cut the cord and, like, be gone. But
yeah,
it's
maybe that's the way
assembly.
I should have said it. Maybe that's the way I should have said it. Kind of, you know, just cut the cord. Yeah.
But our Urban Assembly kids have sort of been brought up in schools that support community, and those kids don't necessarily want to be rid of that community and that network. Now we do, our team has to, you know, essentially teach them how to engage more with the Urban Assembly family and with the networks around them.
Yeah.
But we do work hard to help them understand that they are part of that larger network. And a lot of what we do through text, and that our texting campaign is probably the largest program that we have. In the beginning,
we really try hard to
utilize language that helps them know that they can trust us, even though they've never met us, right? So we're a team of three, they don't know who we are. Like, they really have no idea who Steph is, who Angelina is, who Jay is. So they leave their high schools, and because, you know, we're the only team that's really not school-based, our only insight or our only access into seniors is through that bridge program, which essentially puts college kids inside their alma maters to help coach the senior class to the transition into post-secondary life, right? So they help them with all the paperwork that has to get done, all these things that need to happen over the summertime, right? I don't think people realize how much there is to do just to matriculate to college or matriculate into other post-secondary paths. And so that bridge program gives our team a little bit of access into students. But the texting program really does a good job of, we kind of have figured out how to create an environment where students can come to us and trust us and ask us questions. And so it's really exciting, but that is something that we do battle against, right? We have to, you know, teach kids who we are, you know, tell them that, you know, we actually can be trusted even though they don't know us from Adam, so to speak.
You know, that's a good point that you're bringing up, that you quote, they don't know who you are. And, Dave, let me swing back over to you. You're executive director of all this, okay? I know that you are very concerned about the kids doing well once they graduate the Urban Assembly high schools, okay, and move on with their lives. How come they're not real familiar with Stephanie and the gang, okay, that she mentioned, okay, before they graduate so they know to do this? I'm just curious, Dave, not to put you on the spot or anything. I don't mean that.
That's okay, man. You know, Larry, on the spot is where I live.
Okay.
So,
welcome
know,
to
think...
the spot, but I don't mean to put you on and you're my good buddy. You know what I mean. It just surprised
me
when you said it that way.
Yeah. One of the things that we're really thinking about is how we really sync up the school experience to the alumni experience and the post-secondary experience, right? And
yeah.
So Stephanie had talked about this a little bit. They're a team of three. We have graduating classes of about, let's see, the 2,000, I would say 3,000 across the network.
Wow.
What we're trying to think about, maybe a little less than that, but what we're trying to think about here is how to make sure that our students are set up for success. And so
right.
Even as Stephanie said that they don't know them well, we're actually working with the other team that she mentioned, the post-secondary readiness team, to ensure that kids are getting linked up into this alumni concept, these post-secondary outcomes and opportunities earlier and earlier. So even if they don't know Stephanie explicitly, they know of the work that's happening when they graduate high school, and we're working to make sure that they have these pathways that match their interests, that match the things that they care about, so that they don't do, no offense, Larry, what you did, you know, left high school and said, forget this thing, I'm never going to be there again. But really understood, like, what's the relationship between what I did in high school? We want our kids to think about how they were prepared in high school to pursue a path that enables economic and social mobility. So Stephanie's doing great work. We're real excited about how we've continued to support our kids. And we're doing, I think, really exciting, innovative stuff in that space.
Steph, go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I just want to piggyback off that because to a certain extent, I actually think that the fact that our students don't necessarily know who we are as people is an asset to the program, right? Because if we can figure out how to build a program and build a texting campaign that enables trust for students who don't know us, then we can go ahead and scale that to other schools, right? Like, we don't want it to be – I mean, I've said this before, you know, we've the caseload model of, you know, advising isn't really working anymore, where you have one advisor who gets to know 100 or 150 students and sticks with them. It's not fiscally responsible. You can't afford to do that. And so you have to find another way to support kids. And I think that's why we're focusing a lot on how to build this environment through text, because if we can figure out how to do it for UA students, you know, who come from vastly different types of schools and who are very different and who don't know who we are, then we can actually model that for other schools, right? And start to, and David mentioned this
before,
like the goal is to reach as many students as possible. And so we actually don't want to have a pre-existing strong relationship with our students, because then that's not going to work for others. So we have to figure out how to do it in this way, and then we can worry about moving that model to other schools.
Right. And Steph, do the kids, you know, you're the director of alumni success. And that word alumni, it always strikes me, okay, I'm perhaps less loyal than other people, okay, to things. But do kids feel, do the UA graduates feel like they are part of something? They are part of a very unique, and I don't want to say elite because you would never say it that way, but a really cool group, okay? And do they feel like they're alumni, not of their high school per se, but of Urban Assembly?
I think we're
I always,
that
I always proudly say I went to Overbrook High. Dave's probably heard me say that 100 times. Okay. You know, in Philly, that's where Will Smith and Will Chamberlain and, you know, a lot of great people went. Okay.
I definitely heard the story.
I know you have. Exactly. And I'm proud of that. Okay. So when the kids graduate Urban Assembly, do they feel like Urban Assembly, and Steph, do they feel like Urban Assembly alumni?
We're getting better at helping them see that they're Urban Assembly alumni, not just alumni
cool.
for, like, gateway school,
yeah,
so to
exactly.
speak. But I think that's Yeah, what I said earlier, too, is, like, you know, we're trying to teach them how to engage in networks, because then that their ability to lock into the resources around them, that's going to facilitate their success. So the first thing we have to do as a team is help them understand that the Urban Assembly is a network that they want to lock into, right? And sometimes that does mean saying, because we will get a lot of students who text us and they're like, what's the Urban Assembly? Are you part of Gateway? And we're like, you know, we have a conversation over text with them about that. But it's not, to be honest, and like I said, these Urban Assembly kids, and maybe it's part of the SEL work that we're doing, but they are really good at asking the right questions and knowing respond in ways that facilitate their own success. So those conversations are had a lot over text. And yes, I mean, some students don't know that they're part of a larger Urban Assembly network, but again, that's what we're really trying to get them to understand, that they're not only part of the Urban Assembly network, but they're, but their Bronx network, their family network, their New York City network, like all of that.
Or wherever they might be. Okay. It's that simple. Dave, you really need to help Stephanie get buy her a large building in New York City, in Manhattan. Okay. Like the Princeton Club, you know, and the Harvard Club, they all have them, you know, and call it the Urban Assembly Club. Yeah,
you know, we have library. Manny Broad here is our,
Manny
Broad
guys
here
smoking
is our office,
pipes. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I don't know if I can get the whole building, but we certainly have a great, wonderful office with a great view, and we're always welcoming our alumni back to the space. So I'll talk to my board. Maybe we could just buy the whole space. I hear that you're helping up with the down payment there, Larry.
Oh, absolutely.
I
own a lot of New York real estate. Mention my name, okay? Please, mention my name whenever you buy it.
I will.
Whenever you buy anything. Oh, yeah, you should get a hefty discount and a low-rate mortgage because they know me so well. Okay?
I love it.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a place, you know, like those British clubs where everybody's smoking a pipe and always drinking a little bit of liquor and that sort of stuff. Older people, of course, I'm talking about.
Just a little bit of liquor, not too much.
And, you know, around the world in 80 days type stuff. Okay?
Yeah.
There you go. You got the picture in your head. All right? Dave, this is interesting. You are, and I know this, I'm going to say it that way, we're now going ahead of the curve. Okay, every school in the country is under the pressure of kids having tremendous difficulty this year and teachers having tremendous difficulty this year because of the pandemic and a million other things. And there's a whole big movement in social-emotional learning. Everybody knows that, okay? It's the number one thing principals and superintendents are concerned about, where they're spending their money, et cetera. But Urban Assembly has been working with social-emotional learning, okay, for years now. And, Dave, I'm going to swing this one to you. You guys are actually, you should be, and I bet you dollars to donuts you are, ahead of the curve. How are the kids doing over the last couple of years who have graduated, okay, with the incredible SEL background you have given them, okay, the focus your educators have put on that? Okay, now just talk about that in terms of perhaps other schools, whoever they may be.
Well, it's a great question, Larry.
Thanks,
and
buddy.
I will say you're very welcome. You know, we really care about, since the beginning of the Urban Assembly's founding, economic and social mobility. So for a long time, we identified that some of the key drivers of economic and social mobility are social and emotional skills. And so Stephanie has done a really great work at surveying our alumni and asking them, what are the barriers? What are the things that are constraining their options in the post-secondary landscape?
Yeah.
And time again, even with the work that we have been doing for so long, what they say is we need more social and emotional skill development. They say things like balancing jobs and school is difficult, right? And we need to think about time management, self-management. They say things like, you know, we learned a little bit about goal-directed behavior, but we could have learned a lot more because the college environment or the post-secondary environment, is very different from our high school environment. We're hearing students say, you had a great, loving, caring, supportive school here in high school, but the real world is a little less loving, caring, and supporting.
Yeah.
I wonder how we could have more responsibility in high school so that we're better prepared. So in all the work we've done, Larry, and all the input that we've put into our schools and our kids, when we ask our alumni what can we do better, they say, give us more. And matter of fact, let me turn it over to Stephanie because she'll be able to speak more specifically to how our alumni reflects on these kind of key ideas.
Steph?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're right. One of the questions, so we survey our alumni twice a year, and we get 30 to 35% respond, which I think tells you how much they value being in the network.
That's
so
a lot. That's
it
tremendous.
Is a lot. It's hundreds and hundreds of alumni every year. So we have access, the Urban Assembly has access to alumni data in a way that no other organization does. And so we ask them very intentional questions, one of them being, you know, what do you need help with the most? And we kind of force them to choose one of five options because that will help us understand, you know, what's going on. So we give them options like academics and things like that. And time and again, one of the highest ones is time management and focus. They need help with time management and focus. And so, and again, it goes back to the SEL skills. And so even, you know, they might not know, oh, I need help with social emotional learning. Like a lot of them, you know, they just, they don't have the language to be able to say that. I know I wouldn't at age 18 or 19.
Yeah.
But they know what time management is. They know that they're suffering from a lack of focus. And that's what they're saying that they need help with, which is why, you know, our programming works in the way that it does. Like one, another question we ask them is like, how often do you reach out to these people for help? And we give them a list of 5 to 7 people. And what we find is our kids are not asking for help, right? And like, honestly, that's one of the biggest barriers to their post-secondary success is they are not asking for help when they need it. You know, the majority of our students are Black and Brown students, and they've been conditioned to just do things on their own. And they don't want to be stigmatized as the kid that actually needs to ask for help. And we try to dispel those myths and tell them, again, through text, through our bridge program, look, everybody else is asking for help. They're just faking it until they make it, right? They're pretending like they're not. And so when we see data come back that says 70% of our kids are not asking for help when they need it, we know that's a problem. And so we know that we can build on programming that teaches them to ask for help. And this is where our connection with the Urban Assembly schools comes into play, because we can backwards map that into some of the focus, some of the curriculum that they're utilizing, so that by the time they're 17 and 18, they are asking for help and they don't need us to remind them to do that.
The kids need the confidence. You just mentioned there are a lot of Black and Brown kids in your world. And they have to go out into a work world, a much bigger world, a world they may not be used to. I have to say it that way, okay. And you have to condition people for that, okay. And have them understand and condition the world. What did most of the kids, when you talk to the kids, what are most of them going into? Okay, do you find that they have? And I bet you do. A good sense of confidence that they can really do whatever they want, especially in I hope so, especially in this day and age. Well, what are you finding just in terms of what they're doing? I mean, I get to tell you what it was like when I was in school. It's really different.
Sure.
Thank God it's really different today. But I was in school about 37 million years ago, by the way. Yeah.
So. I think it's hard for them because they have so many options. And everything is so immediate for them, and they go on social media and they see, oh, all these people are so successful. Why am I not successful? And so, you know, again, like helping them, you know, distinguish between realities is really important. And that's why, like, our texting focuses a lot on inspiration, motivation, encouragement, giving them the confidence, you know, like, you know, it's not about giving them answers. It's about giving them the confidence to seek out the answers themselves, right? And we figured out how to do this over text, even though, you know, it's a tool that can reach them and engage thousands of them. But in terms of answering your question about what are they doing, you know, about 70 to 75% of our students will go directly into college, you know, whether it's a two-year or four-year.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
I'm a huge fan of community college. Two-year college. I think that's where everybody should start. But don't get me started on that one yet.
No,
that's where everybody should start.
The potential for social and economic mobility with community colleges, especially the city universities in New York, they're excellent.
Yeah.
And they've been even proven to facilitate social and economic mobility. But, you know, a lot of our, and this is interesting because when we ask them what sorts of careers they're hoping for, a lot of our kids, you know, they're first generation college students, so they don't know what's out there. They're like, oh, I'm going to go to college and maybe be a doctor or a lawyer, because, like, that's what they've heard of. And I'm a first-generation college student myself. I didn't know what the heck I was doing when I got to college.
Me too.
I applied to one school, you know, 20 minutes away. I'm like, I guess I'll be a teacher. I don't know. What we have to do is teach them what options are out there. And if they're not doing well the first year of college, we have to help them understand what those options are, right? I mean, our point of impact in our programming is between the first year and second year out of high school, because data shows that if we can have an impact between year one and year two, then those kids are much more likely to graduate college, to graduate into other post-secondary pathways. And so that's why our programming focuses on those first 2 years. Those are the hardest years, those are the transition years. And so being able to show kids what those options are really important, especially those careers that they might not have thought of before that are more lucrative, say, than being a social worker or a teacher, because a lot of them do have an inkling towards, like, service jobs, so to speak, because that's what they know.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. In the professions they would most run into if you're in a real strong urban area like that, I'm stereotyping here, is your teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I have to ask, because there's such an educator shortage right now, okay, especially of people of color, all right? And a lot of them going into – I have to just ask this. Are a lot of them going into – are they going into education? I hope so.
Yeah, no, they are. We don't have, unfortunately, this is something that we have to, that we're trying to focus on now, is partnering with organizations that can give us access to a lot of the employment and wage data that we need. Because it's one thing to ask students what they're doing and what kind of job they have, that's self-reported, but we really want to place a stronger emphasis on getting the data from the source. So anecdotally and through our surveys, we think a lot of them, yes, are going into education. Into social work. Yeah, exactly. Lot to be said, and there's a lot of programs in New York City specifically that help train black and brown kids to be educators, because it does matter.
Absolutely.
When you see someone at the front of the classroom who looks like you, that makes a big difference.
I cannot emphasize how much we need those kids. And, you know, you said something interesting that struck me. You said the kids are in high school, then they go out into the big world, and suddenly they're met with reality, if I may. It's almost like a paraphrase of kind of what you said. Pardon me. And, you know, I was thinking it's up to these kids, if I may, to change that reality. Okay? Mm-hmm. What was real 2 years ago is not real anymore. We have to make that. So now is the time to make the change. Okay, and your kids I'm serious, everything's changing out there, okay, and now's the time to create a new reality. I sound like I'm writing a rock song from the 1960s.
What gets frustrating is you saying everything's changing, but unfortunately, higher ed isn't changing, right? That's the one thing that's just stuck in its ways. And I say this knowing, you know, my husband's the chair of an English department at Manhattan College, and I see how jaded he is by colleagues in a system that really is unwilling to jump into the 21st century. So yes,
they have to.
Our kids do need to help change the world, but also, like, the world needs to change too. I mean, you know, we talk all the time about, you know, students being college ready, but we don't talk enough about colleges being student ready. And I think that's really when the game is going to change. Yeah, I mean, it's not my line. I mean, it's something that we talk a lot about in the college
I haven't heard
field,
it phrased
like
that way.
Higher ed just really, really needs to change, because the responsibility can't always be on our kids.
I work with a woman. We work together. Her name's Amy Gamble, Amelia Gamble. She was a college professor, and she wrote a book, which you're going to love when I say this, Dave. You ready for this? It was called Help My College Students Can't Read. Okay?
That's disappointing, Larry.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was about the kids graduating A's and B's, mostly in the Detroit area, because that's where she taught, okay, at Jackson Community College, okay? And these kids would graduate with A's and B's. They go over to Jackson Community College. They were reading at a fourth or fifth grade level, okay? Mm-hmm. The professors, and just what Stephanie just said, the professors, and the professor, let's just say, is a professor of chemistry or a professor of history. and suddenly that person has a student who might be bright but has been taught to read at a fourth grade level. Okay? And what's
well, and you have to remember, too, that
to it's unbelievable. So wait, I got to finish. So Amy put together a whole training that she does at colleges all over the country to train the professors to deal with the students they have today. Okay, and it's a great training. We work together on it. Okay, I'll send you some information so you know about it, Steph, just for fun.
Yeah, no, I mean, and two things about that. Number one, like, it's not the kid's fault that he can't read
it's absolutely
at a college
it's not
level,
the kid's fault.
Right? And
ridiculous.
Two, it's what we don't, I don't think, talk about enough is college professors didn't go to college to teach.
That's
they're
exactly
not
right. Boy,
they didn't get trained
on.
To teach.
They're not teachers.
They got
they're professors. They're good in their subject.
Right.
Yeah.
So they don't even you know, I was a college writing instructor. No one taught me how to teach. You know what I mean? I kind of figured
thank
it
you.
Out.
Thank you. We are in the
but
same
like,
wavelength.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, like, you know, you can't expect, you know, even an English teacher to teach a kid how to – you know, write or read at the at that grade level. They don't have the pedagogical skills. They were not taught to do that. And so
that's
I
right.
think that's and that's also something we tell our students. Like, look, when you go into college, you are not going to get the same kind of teachers you got at urban assembly schools or at any high school, because these professors, you know, just telling them, like, they didn't go to school to teach. They didn't learn how to teach. And even that context really empowers our students, because they're like, oh, it just it shifts the balance a little bit, and it helps them understand that new reality. And I think that's what we focus a lot on, is helping them understand what it is they're seeing when they're inside a classroom looking at a professor and looking at everybody else.
And I'll tell you something else. If the professors don't change and understand the teachers they are teaching, a lot of schools are paid by the government on student retention. And if you don't retain your students and teach them, I might add, okay, you're going to lose. It's a vicious cycle. All right?
No,
it absolutely is. I mean, it's unbelievable. And there's isn't a college in the country who shouldn't hire a professor who hasn't had a pedagogical course, but they always do. It's unbelievable. We can go. You want to talk for 12 hours on this? We can do it. Let's get back to urban assembly. Enough to make you nuts. Okay, you guys do such a good job, again, and I want all the school districts to understand what Urban Assembly does, you can put into practice, and this works, okay? Mm-hmm. It really works. Steph, you're doing a good job. It's a pleasure to know you. I'll send you some information on
this
training. It's interesting. Your husband will find it interesting.
Yeah, no, I'll talk anytime.
Yeah, do it. Do it. It's great, man. It's good. And David, have fun with the mayor.
Larry, I let him know that you said hi. Thank you for the down payment on our new building, and I'm going to see you when I get
the UA
to
club.
Area.
The UA club.
That's
and,
right.
And what's going to happen when they snap the picture today? They're going to all say, "Who's that guy up there with Dave Adams? What is that?"
But you'll
the mayor.
You'll know that
you're
that
famous.
The mayor of New York.
You're famous. He's a good man. I wish him well. Okay, I do. I do.
Thank you, Larry.
I really do. Okay, good guy. Have fun today, guys. Thank you, Steph. It's great to know you. You take care.
Thank you so much.
You'll hear from me soon.
Thank you, too.
Thank you.
Awesome.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, my good friend Dave Adams, the executive director of UrbanAssembly.org, and the amazing Stephanie Fiorelli, who's the director of Alumni Success. Okay, that's S. Fiorelli at UrbanAssembly.org. And we'll archive at ace-ed.org. A lot of challenges out there. These guys got their act together. Check it out, urbanassembly.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Check out what we do at ace-ed.org, and thanks for listening.